And welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z. How are you doing, everyone out there? Glad to that you're joining us for this innovative radio and interesting information where we discuss health, wellness, and alternative medicine. Again, I'm Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician and founder of the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine. And Dr. Kamai, the natural nurse, is not joining us today, but she's a little bit on vacation now. But we have a great guest, and you can always get more information about us and what we're doing on our websites. That's Dr. Z Naturally and naturalnurse.com. So we have a very interesting guest this morning, Dr. Kiltz. And he is a board-certified OBGYN and reproductive endocrinologist. I don't think we've ever had someone of that education and stature and professionalism on the program. So that's interesting. It's going to be a show. But he's earned recognition outside of his fertility work for looking at holistic health and keto lifestyle. And his latest book, Living Your Best Life, How to Think, Eat, Connect Your Way to a Better Flow. He's going to give us guidance to help us basically bring mind, body, and spirit into balance and help us with some of these issues pertaining not only to fertility, but just so many other issues in life. But I do have a lot of fertility questions, so that's I'm sure he'll be there. How are you, doctor?
I'm very well, Dr. Z. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So you've certainly been through some education. Tell us about how you made this kind of connection into more holism from your original conventional allopathic training.
Well, I'm a Western trained physician, and that was my focus on healing with shots, pills, and surgery in general. And we're not trained in holistic methods. And through the years of practice, I found that many of the techniques we used didn't work. And I was finding many of my patients, clients, who were going towards acupuncture and meditation and yoga, and were seeing success. And I too had troubles in my journey of life health-wise, irritable bowel, arthritis, migraines, and didn't natural, I should say Western medicine wasn't helping me either in that. And that's when I began to look at what my patients were doing to see if there was some truth to their experience. And this was about 20 years ago that I began to delve into Eastern medicine, philosophy, meditation, yoga, acupuncture, chiropractic, and sending my patients on that route. And then about 15 years ago, I started delving into dietary changes and how those help and reduce inflammation and give us a healthier physical and mental outlook on life.
That's great. I'm so glad that you've joined the ranks of holistic thinking practitioners. A lot of colleagues just decide to just blow it off as some foo-foo. And you actually looked into it seriously and decided that, you know, something that's thousands of year old, you know, has kernels of truth within it. I guess that's what you saw by studying the philosophy of natural medicine.
Essentially, yes, which has been around for many thousands of years before Western medicine. And we are seeing so many of our patients finding acupuncture improves egg quality, reduces endometriosis and massage and herbal medicine, certainly true. And then we've also talked a lot about philosophy and spirituality and faith and how we can plug into this cosmos of thinking that can change the physiology within our bodies. And there's so much science out there to show us this, but we're waiting for the prospective randomized study to prove it. And we'll be waiting until the end of time for a true proof, as Western medicine seems to need.
So, you know, it's funny. It's probably serendipitous. I actually have a fertility patient this evening that I'll be talking to. And it's just interesting when you look at her case. You know, I know we can't look at everyone's individual, but they've tried all these different approaches and basically have given up and said that, you know, many things have been ruled out, certainly patency issues with the fallopian tubes, and no salpingitis. She seems to be producing eggs, yet at the same time, she's not conceiving. So that's why she's consulting with myself, and we're looking at other alternatives for helping that. But what are some things that you've seen in your many, many years of practicing help with fertility?
Well, obviously, we generally approach this. Are the tubes open? Do you have sperm? And do you have eggs?
Yeah, we'll almost check out in her case. Everything checks out. Yeah.
And I would say that's the number one finding for the majority of our patients, unknown cause, unexplained, idiopathic. But I think that the stresses of life, both the mental stresses and the physical stresses that happen in our bodies, we don't understand them very well. And I've come to believe that inflammation created by our mental stress and our physical stress due to our environmental factors, our food, our energy, exercise, our work environment, damage the very cells that are responsible for normal reproduction. And if reproduction is harmed, that's like the foundation of health and wellness. It's the canary in the coal mine, essentially, because I have so many healthy patients that are infertile. In fact, they may not be healthy if they're infertile. This is why where I begin to look at what are the things that you focus on mentally? What are the stresses in your life mentally? Work factor, home factor. What are you reading? What are you listening to that sends cortisol and epinephrine showers throughout your bloodstream, affects your reproductive hormones and cells? And this is where we've found that meditation and prayer and yoga and Tai Chi, and recognizing that we have to slow down. And I know for myself, I've been a workaholic for years in many ways, but I too need to put it away and take time off to reduce the stress hormones in my own body personally. And I talk a lot about how patients need to start there to reduce the inflammation. And we know that epinephrine and cortisol are fighting against serotonin and oxytocin, which are the rest and digest versus the fight or flight. And so by focusing on these things, and when Western doctors begin to practice them themselves and talk about them, I've written a number of books on keto lifestyle, on the fertile feast. I've written books on meditation, intention, and integrating prayer and spirituality is so critical to our lives that we need to talk about it in Western medicine, not just kind of relegate it to another part of people's existence.
So you said that stress is the enemy of fertility. Does that have a, let's talk about the physiology of that. And is there any survival? I'm thinking evolutionarily, that makes a lot of sense, right?
Well, sure. When you're fighting flight mode, it's not a time for reproduction. It's a time for move from where you're at, or make a safe environment of where you're at. And I don't think we understand how to do that very well. We're over-marketed of keeping on doing and doing and doing. And you need to be successful. You have to have the house, the car, the clothing, the jewelry, the money, rather than just mastering being you individually and finding that first. I think it's really important for us to refocus our daily intentions and our life journey.
So one kind of does that by replenishing. The way we're trained in naturopathic medicine is you can't suck water out of a dry well, as the old saying goes. So we look at the master hormone, pregnenolone, which is kind of like the thing that both men and women make, but can go to either the stress pathway or the reproductive pathway. So the body has a choice. And I guess if they're under a lot of stress or there's been stressful events, the body will steer that to the stress pathway and sacrifice all those other hormones. So that's something I think patients have to realize if they're trying to conceive.
And if they're having troubles, we're often looking for a diagnosis, a blood test or some other test that will explain the problem. But I would say that the problem is already the explanation that you're having stress in your life, either mentally and physically. And really, it's a combination, because thinking creates an electromolecular energy that affects the cellular expression, even the DNA and the hormones output, and even the receptors are critical by looking at these alternative methods. And I don't really shouldn't call them alternative. They should really be the mainstream of our health and wellness is complementary medicine, and looking at things like chiropractic, massage, acupuncture, meditation, and prayer, even looking at herbal medicine, because really herbal medicine is the ancient, really pharmacological processes for the human existence.
Absolutely, definitely. What about, you spend a lot of time about nutrition. So let's focus our energy on that too, because it's not only what you eat, it's what you absorb, of course. So we have to work on both of those things. But sometimes the first thing to do is to look at how people eat, what they do. Do they Fletcherize their food? See, there was this old naturopath that back in the 1800s, Fletcher, who wrote volumes and volumes of books about how to eat, how to chew. I thought you might be interested in that, because I know you've been researching this for a long time. You know, what settings to eat in and what settings not to. Just fascinating stuff. And so when you're in the fight or flight, people eating, driving, and eating in different places, or eating, arguing with their spouse or kids, and things like that, that shuts down the whole digestive system. What do you think about that, Doc?
Well, you know, we're eating on the run. And I know I used to eat in my car all the time, and constantly stopping at a gas station, a quick stop, or the market, and grabbing a bunch and just eating constantly. And I think that we are not grazing animals. We should be eating far less frequently. My belief is one meal a day or less is actually the best thing that anyone can do to reduce inflammation in the gastrointestinal tract, which ultimately spreads throughout our entire body. I focus a lot on fasting and the idea of ketogenic lifestyle, which is essentially a high fat, low carb, and even a lower protein diet than we are currently eating, because protein and carbs both have adverse effects on our cells and our body and our GI tract. And eating fat, and technically animal fat is fat. Plant oils are manufactured typically by industrial sources. So a complete shift for me when I did this. I'm Italian, Mediterranean. I had terrible bowel problems, arthritis, migraines. And when I finally went to one meal a day, I personally am primarily carnivore, but even as a vegan or vegetarian or Mediterranean, if you can add the fat, eat one meal a day, you will significantly allow the bowels to rest and heal, rest and repair. You'll reduce the amount of glucose and other plant chemicals that are absorbed in the bloodstream, which ultimately are the leading cause of our disease.
So that's kind of sounds like a myth, I guess. Eating once a day is good for you. We've been talked about you need to eat frequently to keep your blood sugar stable, or if you have hypoglycemia, that's not a good thing. So what are...
Well, that's what we're taught, but it's incorrect.
Okay.
Because we know through the spiritual practice of fasting, we heal our bodies and our minds. Our bodies do not have any requirement for carbohydrate or a sugar ever to be eaten. Our body knows how to keep our blood sugar where it needs to be, irrespective of eating food. Our body utilizes fatty acids for energy always. So the modern recommendation for 3 to 6 meals a day has created more disease than ever before. Obesity in and of itself is not the cause of disease, but it's the consumption of a high plant-based, frequent eating that keeps our blood sugar level high, our insulin level high, which ultimately is the cause of disease. Your blood sugar wants to be 40 to 60 is my bet. But because carbohydrates like fruits were limited to certain times of year, when you found them, you wanted to eat as much as you can in order to gain the fat that is the energy for the human body. So what I found when I did this, all my bowel bleeding, arthritis, psoriasis went away. Then I went on a trek to figure out why. Well, you don't need to eat carbohydrates, fiber, fruits, or vegetables ever. There's no requirement by the body. We've been taught that it's the best thing, but yet we're seeing more disease than ever before. Most people don't know anything about oxalates, phytates, glutens, and all the other phytochemicals and plant antigens that actually lead to the 99% of our diseases. So it's a mystery, but I've practiced it. I've seen so many of my patients doing it. If you go to my blogs on drkiltz.com, you read my books on ketogenic lifestyle, and you do it, you will feel better than ever. Now, again, you could be a vegan, vegetarian, or a standard eater as long as you eat one meal a day. Now, if you're having trouble with gaining weight, well, add more fat. I make a really awesome ice cream made out of cream. You could use coconut oil, coconut milk if you want, a little bit of white sugar, a little bit of vanilla, and an egg. And it's amazing. I love food, no doubt about it. But I recognize that variety and spice and living in the amusement park is not good for our human body. And so we are in a situation of the world today, as it's happened before, where we have to recognize our individual responsibility for our own health and wellness. Not a doctor. There's so much information to be gained on the internet, blogging, videos, books, so much that you now have control of your health and wellness and the knowledge without getting accepted to a medical school or a library that's going to limit availability in so many ways.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but there's a lot of nonsense too on the internet as well. So we have to be careful. That's why it's good to look at, you know, go visit experts and like yourself, myself, and things like that to kind of look at the wheat from the chaff as far as information goes.
Yeah, you have to be very discerning for sure, but you have to pick and choose and recognize you're the one that has to go out there and look and hunt and discern it individually.
Right. Tell us a little bit about what ketosis is for those that don't understand, that never took a physiology course. Maybe they were a business major, and you and I are talking maybe at a higher level than we have to bring it down to sort of like, what is ketosis? Why? What does it mean, physiology? Why is that an important evolutionary discovery and step that humans did for survival? Maybe bring it way down for listeners.
Well, I personally think it's confusing and it may be a little incorrect. We've been talking about ketones and ketone bodies, beta-hydroxybutyrate, acetoacetate, and acetone. They're important, but they're not that important. Essentially, all glucose goes to the liver and it's converted mostly to fatty acids, fat. When you don't eat very frequently, the levels of ketones rise because the level of glucose goes down. So essentially, it really is looking at ketones and glucose levels. What we know from the last 100 years or less is that glucose is the deadly chemical for the body. It should be lower. And so when it's lower, the ketone bodies look like they're higher levels through something called ketoacidosis. Diabetics type 1 cannot run out of fat essentially, and they go into something called ketoacidosis, where their fat levels are acetyl-CoA levels are elevated, but mostly it's because their glucose levels are elevated and they don't have insulin and they're not able to convert their glucose to fat and lower their glucose levels. So the whole process, there's such a confusion about it. For me, it's simple. Keep your glucose levels low and you don't even have to think about ketones. This is why fasting is the most important thing that we can do as human beings. And it's the number one improvement of your health and wellness, no matter what you're eating. You can do that. I personally do one meal a day, but if you do one meal and one snack, that'll help keep the glucose levels lower, and essentially the ketones will show up and be a little higher. The damaging component of the body is glucose.
Yes, yeah, that's very true. I mean, it causes all kinds of problems. It acts like a super glue binds the proteins and makes everything not work well with it, and it actually makes free radicals, destructive chemicals themselves called the ages. There's an old saying that the old time naturopaths used to say, it's the ages that age you.
That's true. That's true. But if you look at glucose,
yeah,
glucose damages all cells through something called glycation.
Right.
So advanced glycation end products and receptors. But we make it so confusing. It really is simple. If you eat 3 to 6 meals a day, and if it's mostly a plant-based diet, your glucose levels are going to be higher. If your glucose levels are higher, your insulin levels must be higher. The digestion of complex carbs takes too long in our digestive tract. That means you're secreting glucose into your bloodstream 24/7, 365. That's the cause of glycation. Glycosylation. My theory is that glucose is important to produce glycans. Glycans are important to create the glycobiome, which binds to proteins and lipids in order to give them their proper function. But because our glucose levels, since before we're born, are higher than they've ever been before in human existence, there's a tremendous amount of cellular damage, nuclear damage, DNA damage, mitochondrial damage, that ultimately is the single most damaging component of the human body.
So getting back to fasting, you know, fasting is has a spiritual side, a physiological side, and even a detoxification side, as many of our foreign xenobiotic chemicals are lodged in the fat. So there's a lot of benefits to fasting besides just keeping your sugar normal. You're constantly detoxing, and as long as your liver and kidneys can process the benzenes and xylenes and DDT and everything that kind of has accumulated in our bodies through our, modern living, or modern living through chemistry.
The interesting part is the majority of the damaging chemicals are actually made by the plants. Plants make damaging chemicals to disrupt your reproduction and your life cycle, because plants can't run and hide, but they make plenty of poisons. But it's the dose makes the poison. Low and slow won't get you right away unless you have an allergy to it. So we typically are worried about the pesticide sprayed on plants, but it's actually the pesticide made by the plant. And we also focus on fat as the culprit, but fat is not the culprit. It's strictly sugar. And when you lower your sugar levels for any length of time, you reduce glycation. That is the single most amazing part. The glycobiome, G-L-Y-C-O, glycobiome, is more important than the microbiome, in my opinion. It's the Teflon shield that protects every cell layer of our body. It gets damaged because of glycation, which damages the glycans and the sulfur bonds and takes away the sulfate negative charge, which causes a sticky layer first in the GI tract, and then it just flows through our vascular system and every place else. seems complicated, but it really is simple concepts and ideas.
Right. That's interesting. So, you know, if someone's not ready to give up carbs right away or limit it, what could they do to kind of ease into this, your philosophy, and follow some of your recipes and life-changing routines?
Well, I think the most important thing is don't eat like a grazing animal. Eat less frequently. If you're used to 6 meals, go to 3. Add the fat. I didn't say that carbs in general, you can eat carbohydrates. If you cook them well, you'll simplify the carbs, which is a healthier absorption for your body, and you'll kill the bacteria, yeast, and microorganisms in the mostly plant-based food. And you may disrupt some of the phytochemicals and the lectins, which can damage the glycobiome. But by adding fat and eating less frequently, if you can do 3, go down to 2. If you're finding yourself still not getting down to the weight you want to be at, go to 1. That's where I found the most benefit. If you look at Dr. Kiltz's Keto Lifestyle and the Fertile Feast, they're on Amazon, you'll find a lot of helpful information there. And there's so many people that talk about keto. Keep reading, keep watching, keep listening, but keep practicing to do something different, because you're obviously listening to these things because you have something going on in your health and wellness, mentally or physically. We're all looking for improvement. We are the temple. We are the most expensive, valuable, and irreplaceable entity of the universe. Whenever we say it's too hard, well, we're making it so. But any of us can do easy. But when you really focus on the value and beauty and love for yourself, you can do the hard things that are necessary to improve your life, both physically, mentally, and spiritually. And even financially, I found such benefits in this whole philosophy and lifestyle. It's really important.
So I hear you have a cookbook coming out soon. What's your favorite recipes in the cookbook?
Well, the Fertile Feast cookbook with Maria Emmerich's coming out. And if you look at Maria Emmerich's cookbook, mine are always going to be carnivore personally. And that's where I sort of start my day. But for me, I'm still go to my one meal at night, and it's a ribeye steak. But I'll do chicken. I love liver. I love pork. But those are always going to be my favorites personally. But the beauty with this book with Marie Emmerich and myself, there's a lot more variety. I tend to be less variety personally.
Interesting. So what about the fact that animals bioaccumulate? We talked about the bioaccumulation of plant toxins, but what about the current state of the meat industry in our country? So how would you answer those types of challenges to the keto lifestyle?
Well, you want to source your foods, no matter what it is, meat or plant-based or milk and cheese, whatever your choice is, you want it to be you want to eliminate pesticides that are sprayed on, certainly added hormones. If you could find a sustainable organic farming for your food, that's really important. We don't want to willy-nilly just put everything and anything in our bodies. My opinion is that our food source in this country for sure is very healthy overall. The real diseases stem from overeating and too much sugar. 99% of the diseases we take care of are related to metabolic disorder. There are sugar diseases. We're not seeing people dying of pesticide or other plant diseases in general. The amount of E. coli is low in general, and the majority of them come from plants, because our meat industry is highly regulated. But bacteria and yeast on plants are more common, and allergies to plants are more common in seeds and nuts than you'll find with the ribeye steak, in my opinion. But again, each individual needs to find the eating style for themselves, whether you're a vegan or vegetarian, a Mediterranean, a pescatarian, or a carnivorian. you need to find that for yourself. But I would say the majority of our food, the, you know, if you're going out to restaurants that you don't know where their food's coming in, how they're preparing it, you know, you want to talk to them and find that out. Organic and sustainable and local may be the best way in all of this. Our world of food today is you go to the market, you could buy things that we didn't have access to ever all year round. And part of it is we're eating too much variety, too much spice, and too frequently. And that's where I think the deadly diseases happen.
Interesting. Well, we need to take a break. It's 1:30. So when we return, we'll talk a little bit more about routines and daily inspirations and mind body sets so folks can get a cup of tea. And we'll be back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Kind of serendipitous that the engineer chose that little segment there. That was not on purpose, but maybe it was. There's no accidents in the universe, that's for sure. So anyway, let's talk more about attitude. And your body and your mind. You spend a lot of time talking about that in your books, and you're a real believer in that you become what you think about, kind of like what the Buddha said in a way. And so tell us a little bit about attitude and health and what's a good inspirational thought process that people can reach or do to improve their daily mindset you talk about.
The mind is the master, and we all know that, or we don't know that. We've forgotten it in so many ways, and we are living our experiences in our day and not recognizing that the experiences are only happening within the mind. And the mind is truly the master. And James Allen wrote an amazing compilation called The Mind is the Master. It's just one book to find out there. But Buddha, Lao Tse, the Tao Te Ching, Hinduism, the Old and the New Testaments, the Quran, our human spirituality, I think, already knows it's there, but we're just not practicing it on a daily level. We're focusing on what we put in the mouth and how we move our body and getting to exercise. But I personally have found for myself that listening and reading others that have been on this spiritual journey to help us reduce the mental chatter, the stress and strain of our thinking and worrying is just so debilitating. But for me, I always start the day with a daily intention or inspiration, and I journal and write. I usually do a daily video, which I've been doing for about 15 years now, which helps me, and I love helping others that are on this same journey, that the mind ultimately, through our thinking, whether it's happy or sad, it creates the molecular energy that touches every nook and cranny of our body.
So do you make a recording of yourself and sort of your self-talk, or what do you do, doctor?
Well, generally, I'll do I'll write an intention, and I've written a few books on this, and I'll do a short video blog of my daily intention inspiration, just kind of talk about the books I'm reading and the things that I found helpful, then I share it with the world. And I listen and learn from others doing the same thing because we're on this journey to help each other.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I'll have to check those things out there. What about gratitude? That's I remember reading many different spiritual teachers talking about starting the morning or ending the evening with gratitude, what you're thankful for. Seems to help with not only manifestation, but just puts us in a great state of mind before we go to sleep. So many people have insomnia. I think over-the-counter sleeping pills and sleeping prescriptions, besides digestive things, tend to be the most prescribed things because people have a hard time turning their mind off. They have what they said, monkey mind. There's a saying in Buddhism, the mind is like a drunken monkey if it's not corralled or disciplined. And so, do you find that in patients when they can't sleep, that you can help them sleep?
Well, if you can't sleep, get up and listen, read, write, do poetry, do pottery, do paintings. Doing something is the best way actually to calm the mind. And so gratitude attitude is critical. I always do a daily gratitude. Thank you for my parents, my friends, my partner. Even the people that have been stresses and struggles in my life, I'm always grateful and I name them and thank you, God, and I love you. I always thank you, God, and I love you is an easy a phrase for me. Judge with love rather than don't judge. We all judge in one way, so use judge with love. I love you. Thank you. And when we find ourselves judging negatively, we can learn to practice to quickly turn it around. Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. Thank you. I love you. Hulin, the Hawaiian philosophy, and I don't remember all the specifics, it's a thank you, I love you, please forgive me. And when we're more loving and kind and forgiving to ourselves in the mirror and others, then shows like yourselves is so important because we need to be listening and learning and communicating together. This COVID time has made it very difficult for so many who have lost their connections with people. Yet at the same time, we've opened many other doors through Skype and Zoom and other chat ways. And now we're doing yoga online versus getting people to come into one little room. So we've actually expanded our ways in our universe. But we need to be communicating with like-minded, positive intentions. But when you're finding you're not in that positive intention group, change it up. go learn from someone that you don't understand or don't believe in. You might find some new avenues and ideas that are going to teach you something radical and different on this journey. But the mind is the master, and your mind is the creator of your reality, because there's no reality outside other than what's created in the human mind itself.
So what about people that have anxiety? How have you worked with those patients? Like they worry about everything and they're fearful of things and not letting go and letting the process of life. And the more they worry, the more they almost manifest those very worries, because they're spending so much mental and emotional time on those types of things, and they're kind of imprisoned by this fear.
Anxiety is normal. We're meant to be anxious so we can be fight or flight if necessary, or rest and digest if necessary. So the anxiety is a protective mechanism. It's natural. But we've lost our ability to plug into the more positive ideas of life. So when you're feeling that, that's when it's time to get to your guitar, or piano, or painting. That will take your mind someplace else and find a creative avenue, even to the anxiety, by the way. But then to go to the place where you want to be listening, Deepak Chopra, Eckhart Tolle, Wayne Dyer, there's so many people that have given us modern ideas, but James Allen's books, The Three Magic Words by U.S. Anderson, Marcus Aurelius, his amazing books that he's written in meditations. Recently, I was reading Ryan Holiday on stillness, and previous, The Obstacle is the Way. So we all are anxious. It's normal. When you see someone that you think is not anxious, they're a human being. It's inside them in one way or another. We're all suffering from these anxieties in one way. But the real way is to look towards the ways of self-help that is out there in infinite ways, but mostly is go for a nice walk in nature, get a camera, do some photography, drawing. You have it within you. We all are artists. We're all highly intelligent. Even though we may not have experience in some areas, I always say do something you're bad at, and the continually bad at it, eventually you'll get good at it. I personally learned to fly an airplane. I started painting about 15 years ago. I have a lot of bad paintings. But there are a few good ones in there.
Yeah, that's great, Doc. What did you mean by connecting your way to a better flow in one of your writings here? Is that one of your books? Is that one of your books, actually? Okay.
Well, part of the idea here in my book, Living Your Best Life, and my daily intentions, inspirations, and even in my book on Fertile Feast and the keto lifestyle, I always talk about the mind and the body connection and how these things that you're doing to get you in the flow. For me, I'm a potter since I was 16. I'll sit down on my potter's wheel and I'll begin to throw for hours. And a lot of it ends up in a bucket, but the flow of life is you're doing what you love to do, even if you're doing it just over thousands and thousands of hours because you really love doing it. If it's helpful to you and in general society, that's even better. If it's harmful, well, you might think of a different flow and a different energy to plug into. But, you know, if we're focusing on our anxiety and our problems and our anger, we're just going to get more into the cortisol and epinephrine layer. You need to talk to someone, find a coach, a cheerleader that'll help you, and then take an art class, take a piano class. These are great ways, and doing it online is a great way, by the way, to find the flow of the thing you love to do. I used to do crochet and sewing a long time ago, and just the what you might call mindless activities, which are actually the mindful activities of life. You're in the garden, you're taking the weeds out of the garden, right? It seems like it doesn't take much intelligence, but it's just the practice and the habitual practice of something that calms the mind will ultimately calm the cellular disruptions and help the body, the blood, and your life flow better.
So there's a big difference between doing nothing and practicing not doing, you're saying.
Ryan Holiday and I think the Buddha, it's cut wood, fetch water. And so it's in the things that, you know, you're not learning something technically new, but if we look at the things that we admire in life, paintings and pottery and jewelry and music, it's through the practice of the same thing over and over and again that can calm the mind and give us some sense of fulfillment in life. Because ultimately, we're all going to die. We don't leave much behind. But some art is always nice, some good music, some writing, a good book, or design and build something. But as they say, don't be too attached to that either, because it will all go. Find some joy and happiness in connecting in a loving way with family, friends, neighbors, or even people that you don't even know in this world that need help. Focus on helping others. I write things on my whiteboard on my wall. It's health and wellness is really developed in helping focus on others and forget about self.
Tell us a little bit about your book, The Fertile Feast.
Well, The Fertile Feast, and I've got The Fertile Feast originally a couple of years ago, and now the new one, which is mostly focused on the cooking and the recipes. But as a fertility specialist, I wanted to integrate our Western and Eastern medicines and philosophies together, because when we talk about ancient Eastern medicine, it came from herbal medicine, these potions and other methods that were developed. And so I look to talk about that. I talk about keto and changing our diet experiences. I talk about fasting, but I also integrate some of the Western concepts on how we can improve the egg quality, even with some pharmacologics that are made by pharmaceutical companies. We use those for sure, but there are also some homeopathic ways to do these things that can be very helpful. Somaderm, which is a topical human growth hormone, or Omnitrope. We find that very helpful. Inositol versus metformin. But again, all of them we use. We're not against any of them. I'm not against, by the way, eating plants or using soy. These are all things that can be very beneficial if they're all consumed in the right quantities and the right quality, too.
Right, definitely.
And well, so the Fertile Feast is focusing on egg quality, sperm quality, and uterine quality. So if we take care of the vessels, the male source and the female source of our reproductive organs or tissue, then you're going to find health and wellness no matter whether or not you have success in having a child or not.
What are some nutrients that help with fertility that you've looked at over the in your research there?
Well, vitamin D, calcium, magnesium, and zinc are all very important. Vitamin E. I mean, just go down to all the essential vitamins and minerals.
I've heard iodine is very important. We were trained by the masters like Dr. Bill Mitchell and Dr. Bastier. He would say that there's more iodine in the ovary than there is in the thyroid, which we thought was like, wow, that's pretty amazing.
Well, our foods, I mean, let's see. So we're not eating salt, but ultimately our food likely had much more dirt in it and minerals in it in our consumption, and our water did also. But we're not eating dirty water. It's all clean and been highly purified. Our plants are, in general, you know, the sources of the iodine aren't there as readily as they have been. But I think that's absolutely true. But interesting enough, the one nutrient that I talk about more than anything is fat. Mm. Fat, without fat, we would die. Type 1 diabetics die skinny. Liver failure patients also fail to make fat, and they die because of that. The liver's number one function is making fat. Mm. Because we do not eat fat, it's actually the single most depleted nutrient. Fat is soap. We don't eat the fat that cleanses the bowels and helps reduce inflammation in the bowels. We infuse something called intralipids to reduce inflammation in the blood, in the bloodstream. Ultimately, when you have vasculitis, and the majority of our vessels, 98 to 99% of them are small capillaries. That's where the disease is happening. And so because we don't eat the fat, remember, we have a high glycated environment because we're eating so much sugar. And when lettuce, when you understand that lettuce and kale and asparagus in the stomach break down to sugar. So if you're eating too much of this, you're causing tremendous amount of glycation. And so using fat in our diet, that's where keto and paleo come in. It's adding fat, but you don't have to add it if you eat the proper foods. That's where hemp seed oil, coconut oil come in. And this is where ghee, butter, and cream come in. And then again, lard, tallow, and animal fat, duck fat. I do love French fries fried in duck grease, by the way, and dipped in mayonnaise. Amazing.
We've been so trained by the cardiology community. I'm sure you have some interesting words to say about that fat's the enemy and causes heart disease. What would you say to all that?
Well, it's not true, because it's glucose is the enemy, not fat. The more carbohydrates you consume, the more fat your body's going to make, because glucose goes up, insulin goes up, and the conversion of sugar to fat in the liver is quick.
Right.
So sugar and glycation. So if you know nothing about the glycobiome and glycation, and most doctors do not know anything about it, but being fat and overweight genetically is a predisposition for survival, because for the last million years, plus or minus, I don't know how many years, the get fat gene was important, because if you were skinny in a famine, you were dead. So we've got it all wrong. We're teaching people the wrong things. I tell people, get off the treadmill, go slow in life, focus on meditation, prayer, painting, and poetry. Go to one meal a day. Food is not meant to be entertainment, although we're often entertained by it. But it's this life-sustaining energy to make fat, which is the fuel for the mitochondria, not sugar. Sugar is not the first energy. Fatty acids are only the energy, in my opinion, including the brain and every other cell of our body. And I believe there's no such thing as insulin resistance. As long as your bloodstream has more glucose than it needs, insulin is going to be elevated. You're going to continue to make fat in the liver. That's the simple story. That's why fasting and keto are so remarkable. And even if you're not keto, but you're eating less frequently, you're going to feel better.
And how long should people... I guess when you see a client, you individually prescribe these different things. But as people get older and they're on the kind of the edge of type 2 diabetes type of situation there, how would you intervene in that patient possibly, with especially with their dietary practices?
Well, the last time I looked and opened up a human being, all of our livers and kidneys and all of our organs essentially under a microscope look the same. So we're really not as unique and different as we'd like to believe we are. Our physiology, metabolism is the same. But it doesn't matter your age, whether you're pregnant or not, you're young or middle age. The ketogenic lifestyle that I've written about in Dr. Kiltz's Keto Lifestyle, I think is important for all of us. Fasting is so important. It's such a simple thing. We are mostly hunting animals. We're not grazing animals on all fours. By changing that simple thing without changing what you're eating, although many people have allergies, which I had a tremendous amount of allergies to the food I was eating. So I would say this is a life plan. It's not simply to lose weight, although you will, or it's not simply to get rid of your disease temporarily. It's something that I think is highly important for all of us to look at something different, because as you know, that what Western medicine is sharing is causing more and more hypertension, diabetes, cancer, infertility, and obesity. And we just don't know the cause, but in my opinion, the cause is simply five simple things.
So why should folks read your book, as we're kind of, unfortunately, we have about three more minutes of the program there. We want to make sure folks can get in touch with you. It's been a enlightening and very interesting discussion, that's for sure, Dr. Fields.
Well, if you care about yourself, and I know you do, this is some opposite ideas than I was taught, but is the most remarkable change that I personally have seen in myself and so many of my patients. And don't you deserve the very best in your life? And if you believe that, you'll buy either the Fertile Feast or Kiltz's Keto Lifestyle or Living Your Best Life. And check out drkiltz.com or check it out on Amazon.
Great. Well, would you leave us with one more very interesting idea that maybe we haven't thought about as we close the program?
I think it's to recognize that we are all temples. And when we recognize the importance of our uniqueness, we are unique individually. We have a very expensive, irreplaceable, and valuable entity within ourselves. When we look in the mirror, we need to see God. God is within all of us. Everything in the universe is within the creation of God's, and we are all that. And you're valuable. Dig deep into learning some new and different things that will change your life. And don't forget, your mind is the master, and what you think creates everything in your life. So keep focusing on what you want, not on what you don't want.
Well, thanks for joining us right here at the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. It's been great meeting you, and I look forward to having you on again, talk about more stuff.
Thanks, Dr. Great. Z. I really appreciate it. God
Very
bless.
You're welcome. You too. And that does it for another edition of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Wishing you health, wellness, and to stay healthy. Bye-bye, everyone.